Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and we've got a great show tonight. We've got James Corbett. He's an independent journalist who's been living and working in Japan since 2004. He's been writing and producing the Covert Report, an online multimedia news information source, since 2007. His forthcoming book, Reportage, Essays on the New World Order, will be available for purchase in 2011. The Corbett Report provides a weekly podcast as well as interviews, articles, and videos about current events and suppressed history from an independent perspective. And if you want to check out his report, you can go to Corbett Report, that's CORBETTREPORT.com, and to get more of the story. But we're lucky to have James on the show with us. James, are you with us?
I am here. Thank you very much for having me on the program today.
Oh, yeah. I saw your piece on some of like the Sierra Clubs and all these other people. And I've always told people, when you look at the sponsors, it's just blown my mind. You know, when you see Shell Oil, you know, and, you know, NPR, you see Merck, you know, the big drug companies and everything else. You just go, what is going on here? And I love some of the things you had to say about that. So, I know we can go anywhere on the show. It's called As You Wish Talk Radio because it's really the guest show and they can go anywhere they want. So I don't know where you want to take us, but wherever you want to go would be fine with me.
Well, it's really up to you. I guess just to introduce sort of who I am and what I do to your audience. As you say, I'm an independent journalist and I've got my own website, CorbettReport.com, where I do basically news and information on what I think is a pretty wide range of subjects. Everything, as you mentioned, from the corporate oligarchical control over the media to things like false flag terrorism, to the central banking fraud, to transhumanism, and all sorts of different subjects. And I basically work on the principle of open source intelligence, i.e. the idea that most intelligence agencies use these days, that 95% of the intelligence you really need to know about what's going on underneath the surface is nowadays available completely open source. It's available on the web for everyone to see and read, and it just tends to be hidden away in the corners where people don't necessarily spend the time looking. And so what I'm trying to do is try to bring those pieces of suppressed history and suppressed information to greater light of public scrutiny, because I think that we're starved and we perish for lack of knowledge. So the obvious answer to that is to get more knowledge.
Yeah, I agree. Well, speaking of past history, we've got this Osama bin Laden program going here, and I'd love to hear your take on what he's been killed something like 9 times now.
That's right. Yeah. So in the immediate aftermath of that announcement, I just I did a very cursory article. It was really just what I was able to scrape together in a couple of hours of 9 or 8 of the previous pronouncements of his death by various people, from the former president of Pakistan, Pervez Musharraf, to the current president of Pakistan, Zardari. To the former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, to the former FBI counter-terror chief, Dale Watson, various other people, Senator Harry Reid. They've all said over the past 9 years at various points that Osama was likely dead, or that they had received intelligence that he was dead. And again, these are not just insane conspiracy theorists. These are heads of state and heads of counterterrorism and things like that. So the fact that he has once again been pronounced dead, again, it may or may not be true. He may have actually been killed this week. But at this point, we still have absolutely no proof of that, other than official government pronouncements basically saying, trust us. And if there's anything that I've learned in my time researching the Corbett Report, it's that I do not trust the government or anything they say on their say-so. So I'm skeptical. It may have really been the death of Osama bin Laden this week. He may have died a long time ago. But either way, I think they're announcing the death of this longtime known CIA asset. And I think that that's being done for some reason. Some people are speculating it's just for political bonus points for Obama. But I think it's much deeper than that. And I really fear that this is the preparation for cause for war with Pakistan, which is very frightening prospect, as we see this this wave of uprisings in the Middle East sweeping across and destabilizing so many regimes. And it's really leading in a certain direction, and I think that that is ultimately heading towards World War III.
Yeah, they have strong ties with Iran as well, and so that might tie us into, you know, a major event there, which is is what it seems like the New World Order boys have had their eyes on Iran for quite some time.
That's right. I see this, as well as the Syrian destabilization that's going on right now, as being primarily really directed towards Iran, or that's the way I see these things going. And ultimately, I think Iran is just another domino on the board that's heading towards toppling China. And I think that a lot of this is really set up towards the big confrontation somewhere down the road with Russia and China and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. But the short term is the destabilization that we see going on in the Middle East. So it's a very, very troubling turn of events, because I think ultimately this is not something that's going to play out to the advantage of the vast majority of humanity, whatever way it falls out, and whoever ends up being sort of the with the upper hand here. Because ultimately, as I know, and I'm sure many of your listeners probably know, there's a lot more going on underneath the surface than we're being told. And it's being puppeteered by people with just incredible vast resources and wealth. And it's being puppeteered for their advantage, not ours.
Yeah, also this, some people are saying that this came out to cover up the birthers program, you know, where they're challenging his birth certificate. And you know, that is probably the most shoddy certificate, forgery I've ever seen. It's just unbelievable how bad it was. And it's almost like it was done on purpose.
Yeah, there are remarkable, bizarre things going on regarding that and the release of that document, and why they spent $1.6 million and all these years fighting at every possible opportunity to release it, and then they suddenly release it, and it has all of these Photoshop layers that can be deconstructed and things. Again, I'm not even sure that personally, I don't have anything invested in the birther meme. Whether or not he was actually born in America, I don't know, but I don't think that's a particularly vital thing to be opposing Obama on. I'd much rather oppose him based on his horrendous policies and the fact that he's a complete continuation, not only a continuation, but really Bush on steroids in terms of torture and secret arrests and the lack of transparency and going after whistleblowers within the government. And all of the things that we saw under Bush is really just continuing, but now it's continuing under left cover. And we see all these people in the left media just giving a pass to everything that Obama does, including starting the unconstitutional war in Libya without any sort of congressional approval. Again, just case after case where he's just extending what Bush did, and in many cases going even further. And no one on the left seems to care. And that just goes to further demonstrate my point that left and right is just a complete failed paradigm that's just meant to keep people's brains in well-defined boxes so that the people at the top can puppeteer both sides and they can benefit no matter who gets into power.
Yeah, it's the old divide and conquer program, and when you own both sides, it doesn't really matter. You know, we see this over and over. I always wonder. You know, they say that's a form of insanity to do the same thing over and over again, and expect a different result. And it seems like our whole political system is that way. And at what point do people wake up and say, "Wait a second, we get the same result every time, no matter who we vote for"? You know, how do we shift this, or how do we change the system?
That's exactly right. And I think it is a type of learning curve. And I don't know what it is that puts people in the state of mind that they're finally willing to take a look at that and question the assumptions that they've been working on. And I certainly don't put myself on a high horse here. I mean, even as lately as 2006, I was still believing that when the Democrats took over Congress, they were going to really investigate the Bush torture and really start prosecuting people. And there was going to be some marked shift in foreign policy. And at that time, I was starting to encounter alternative media on the web that was saying it's all a charade and nothing's going to change, and they're just going to continue with all the policies and it's going to march ahead like nothing happened. And at the time, I was extremely skeptical of that, and I thought, well, I truly don't believe it. And if the last 5 years have vindicated anyone, it's definitely been the people who were skeptical of that and the people who've pointed out that this is all just two sides of the same coin, two wings on the same bird of prey. And I've very much been cured of my beliefs in that regard, and I certainly didn't fall for the Obama deception when it came along in 2007-2008. I wasn't falling for it, and I think my skepticism has been vindicated over the past few years, as we've seen Wall Street and the financial interests are really the only beneficiaries of this administration.
Yeah, I know they I don't know if they ever released the entire list of where all this money went.
Bloomberg recently managed to get some documents out of the Fed, the Federal Reserve, that indicated where a lot of the 2008 money had went. And as expected, and as already partially known, a lot of it went into the hands of foreign banking institutions. So again, why is the Federal Reserve spending, you know, literally shipping trillions of dollars out the back door to foreign banking interests while the economy is collapsing and the too big to fails are being bailed out with taxpayer money? It's a ridiculous situation when you even begin to start peeling off the layers of the onion. But again, there's not enough people doing that right now. So that's very much what I'm engaged in, is trying to get people aware of these issues so that they'll start looking into it for themselves. Because again, I'm not here on a high horse, and I'm not saying that I have all the answers. I'm just saying that there's a lot more going on than what we're being told. And until people start to question it for themselves, they'll never be able to wake up out of this paradigm.
I think that's what it's all about, is not having all the answers, but asking the tough questions.
That's it. And it's not for myself or people like me who, I'm just a citizen journalist. I'm just actually a teacher here in Japan, an English teacher. And I do this completely just on my free time, on the evenings and weekends. So I'm not here putting myself up as some sort of paragon of journalism or the person who's going to have all the answers. And I don't think I should be. In fact, the idea, if you had put it to me a few years ago, even, that I was going to have a website and I was going to be putting out this information, I would have thought it would be a ridiculous idea, because that's not my place. But just the more information that I started to encounter that went completely opposite to what was being reported in the so-called mainstream news, the more of that I started to encounter, the more I realized it is incumbent on us, especially at this point in history when we have access to so much information at our fingertips, it's incumbent on all of us to take it into our own hands to start spreading the information that doesn't oppose the interests. Because we've known for a long time now that the mainstream journalism has been completely co-opted by the financial interests that don't stand to gain from the public knowing the truth or looking quizzically at any of these myths and fables that they parade out in front of us, like the Osama bin Laden myth. And so it's up to us to do it. And that's not a nice answer to give people. Most people want to be able to just give their money to whatever, subscribe to whatever news source and have it give them all the information. But I think we have to take it more into our own hands and do it while we still have something like a free and open internet.
Yeah, that's my next question. They seem to be moving full steam ahead to block the internet. And I know there's more and more people that are just not watching TV anymore, and they're getting their news on the internet and going to alternative news sources. And unfortunately, what I've seen too in some of these alternative news people, even some of the most outrageous ones, are turning out to be not who you think they are, and financed and operated by people, you know, in certain agencies and things like that in the banking industry and whatever. And it's just a mind blower sifting through this, trying to figure out who's who and who's compromised and who is really there in service to the people.
That's right. I think at a certain point a few years ago, we would have had to have been naive to believe that the government wasn't involved in creating phony opposition and phony alternative media outlets to try to distract people and put out their own propaganda in ways that are convenient to them. But I think these days we'd have to be actually ignorant of the facts to believe that, because it has come out, of course, with a high-ranking official in the Obama administration came out a couple of years ago, and he was writing, he was a Harvard professor at the time, and he was writing about the idea of cognitive infiltration of the alternative media, i.e. that the government really has to start creating websites or creating personalities to comment on websites in order to interject government talking points onto the blogosphere. And this is now a high-ranking communication official in the Obama administration, so there's no doubt that that's already being done. And I would suggest people go and read that essay that he wrote about cognitive infiltration, because it's just so ridiculous on its face. He, of course, is deriding conspiracy theories and conspiracy theorists, i.e. anyone who questions what the government tells them. And one example he gives of what is an insane conspiracy theory is the idea that sunlight is good for you. He says that's a conspiracy theory that must be countered by the government, and that just the ridiculousness of this type of thing. But again, it's a lot of propaganda is just aimed at people, the unfortunately the vast majority of people, who are only going to look at the headlines and only looking at the surface level of events. And so it's everything that I'm geared towards is trying to get people to go just even one step beneath that surface and to try to look quizzically at who's providing the information and for what purpose. And again, I'm not trying to say that, you know, I'm above scrutiny or that people shouldn't be suspicious. Sure, you should be suspicious of everyone. That's why I always include links to the documentation for what I'm talking about on my website so that people can go and look for it at it for themselves and come to their own conclusions. Because I'm not here to convince anyone of anything. I'm just here to get them to start looking at it for themselves. So I don't know where you'd like to go from there, but there are a number of possibilities. But again, as I say, I think the right now, the thing that I'm really concerned about is the way that the events are shifting towards the type of great geopolitical confrontation that unfortunately I think is being set up and prepared. And the Osama bin Laden fable that's just come out is one important part of that, I think. And we see that from the way that bin Laden was supposedly found in this compound, literally 1 kilometer away from a Pakistani military academy, the entire area being infested with high-ranking military officials and intelligence agents. The implication being that Pakistan and the Pakistani military and intelligence knew at the highest levels where Osama was and thus cannot be trusted as an ally on the war on terror, thus being the justification for some sort of, if not invasion, at least some sort of, takeover of the Pakistani political process. And we're going to see this playing out in the next few weeks, and we'll have to see what form it takes. But I just saw an article today from the Washington Times about how the nuclear question has been raised because, of course, these high-ranking officials who were supposedly, apparently, harboring Osama bin Laden, of course, have access to Pakistan's nuclear arsenal, which is a concern for the world. So, again, we're seeing it being prepared, seeing a public being prepared for the possibility that we're actually facing some sort of nuclear event. And that's a very particularly disturbing possibility because we just had a few days before Osama was allegedly shot and killed, we had a WikiLeaks release from Guantanamo Bay interrogations indicating that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the supposed mastermind of 9/11, and again, that's a whole other story we could get into, but he was apparently indicating that if Osama should ever be captured or killed, he will be there will be a nuclear hellstorm because Al-Qaeda has all of these nuclear weapons placed all over Pakistan, or all over Europe, I should say, sorry. So I think we should read that not in the sense of a threat from some sort of terrorist mastermind so much as something that was extracted from someone under torture or supposedly extracted from someone under torture, because of course all of the interrogation videos from the key interrogations of people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed were deliberately erased by the CIA, so we have no idea what actually came out of them, and there's no way to verify what's been said. And if they were extracted from him directly, they were extracted under torture anyways, because Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was subjected to waterboarding something like 180 plus times in a single month, during which many of the interrogations for his supposed 9/11 confessions came out. And they there was reports also at the time when he was captured that the CIA had also captured his children and were holding them hostage to get him to talk. So again, I don't think we can take anything that supposedly came from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed seriously, even supposing it did actually come from him. And I see this really as a possibility of a threat of the nuclear false flag terrorism, i.e. the idea that a nuclear event of some kind may be used as a justification for war. So it's a very disturbing situation, as I say. And as we mentioned before, I think it's heading in the direction of Iran and the overthrow of Iran, as I said in a long time ago in my podcast, is really the start of what I think would be World War III, as China and Russia would inevitably have to get involved in that.
Great. I lost there for a second. I totally lost my connection, so I missed part of what you're saying.
That's all right. I noticed that. I just kept going because I figured.
Right.
But at any rate, yes. So I'm talking about the idea of possibly a nuclear false flag terrorist incident being used to bring us into the next stage of this mythical never-ending war of terror, which is supposedly going to be the paradigm for the 21st century. Or, well, we'll have to see how it plays out. But I certainly am not taking any of these events lightly, but I'm not taking them at face value either. And I think should some big event strike in the near future, I think people will have to take it upon themselves to really, truly scrutinize what's going on. And I think the possible hope in this scenario is that 10 years ago, something like 9/11 happened, and there were very few people who were willing to question what had just happened. And the people who were willing to question were very disconnected. But over the past 10 years, we've seen things like the rise of the 9/11 truth movement that have raised very important questions about what really happened that day. And it has become something more united, and people are more connected in their resistance to the official story of 9/11. So I think there is the possibility that if something happens today, it will be a very different political context. So I'm not sure we have necessarily broken the tool of false flag terror, but I think it would be a lot harder to perpetrate than it was 10 years ago.
Well, I agree. I know the 9/11 movement, there's a lot of theories about that things were planted and that it was an implosion, you know, a controlled implosion, or some secret weapons were used, some special weapons. And I know they have this technology where whatever they shoot this beam weapon at just turns to powder, basically. And when you look at at what was left of those buildings, I mean, everything just turned to dust. It was just unbelievable. So anyway you look at it, I don't know exactly what they used to do it, but I there's no other way that I could see that happening other than some type of controlled demolition. I've tried to look at the government story of two planes hitting it and the way the buildings went down and steel structured buildings, and it's never happened in history, and a fire and planes do not take those type of buildings down. It just, nothing adds up on that whole story.
I agree. Well, I don't tend to get into speculation about what precisely did happen, because again, how do I know? I'm just trying to put the pieces together. But I certainly do know that it would be beyond the realm of credibility to truly believe that those two planes knocked down those three towers that day, especially World Trade Center Building 7. Yeah. When you start to look into the investigation of the collapse of World Trade Center 7 and the official NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, report on that collapse, you start to see some of the absurdities of it. For example, they said that the World Trade Center 7 could not have come down from demolitions because there were no explosions that day. And someone called them on that and said, well, you didn't even check for explosives in the rubble of World Trade Center 7, so how can you know there were no explosions? And they said, well, we didn't check for them because there was no need to check for them because it wasn't brought down by explosions. And that was basically the level of investigation, so-called, that they put into their efforts. And now they have this theory about how thermal expansion caused one of the girders to walk off its seat and caused the progressive collapse of the entire building. I think people who take a look at the video of that can see for themselves how ridiculous an explanation that is, as the entire building comes down symmetrically into its own footprint at free fall gravitational acceleration for 2.5 seconds, free fall gravitational acceleration, which can only happen if every single beam and girder and connection is broken at the exact same moment, which I think we can say would not happen from an asymmetrical fire. So no doubt that there's deep questions, but I also don't simply focus on the physical anomalies of that day, because I think there's much, much more going on 9/11 than simply that. There's obviously things like the 9/11 money trail, which I think still has not been adequately investigated. And you look at the SEC so-called investigation of the insider trading that was taking place on that day. Not only the airlines, like most people know about, the high volume of put options that were being put on airline stocks in the lead up to 9/11, so that somebody profited to the tune of millions of dollars on those trades, but also all sorts of other put options on different companies. There was a 2006 study published by...
The purchase of the building, everything, and the security of the building, and who was...
That's right. Yeah, the security obviously being run by Kroll, which is a very interesting company to look into, and the involvement of someone named Jerome Hauer, who also apparently, according to the New York Times, told the Bush administration to go on Cipro, the anti-anthrax drug, on the morning of 9/11. And of course, right after he did that, supposedly, we find that the anthrax attacks had been launched. And the anthrax attacks is another absolutely key part of that whole 9/11 myth, because, again, that's something that's kind of been swept under the rug since it came out that the anthrax came from Fort Detrick, and the FBI investigation lasted several years, and finally they pinned the blame on someone who then conveniently committed suicide before he had a chance to actually be tried in a court of law. So, again, all we have is FBI hearsay and speculation, but, again, that case is even falling apart, and we have congressmen who are now calling for a new FBI investigation of the FBI investigation. So there's all sorts of anomalies, and as I say, it extends not only the physical anomalies of what was happening that day, but it extends forwards and backwards in time. I think 9/11 was really just a focal point for numerous different agendas that came together at a certain point. And I think when we see these spectacular false flag events like 9/11, it's generally people want to say, well, why was it done? Was it done in order to get rid of the SEC records at World Trade Center 7, for instance, or was it done in order to launch the war in Iraq? But I don't see it as being that simplistic. I think these types of operations can only be done if the agendas of numerous different individuals come together at the same time.
All right. Hopefully, we're back on the air. We're
right,
on
this
another.
This is James Corbett. We're back on the air, but we seem to be having some technical difficulties. So the host will be joining us once again quite shortly, I hope. But at any rate, until that point, I'm happy to keep going. So as I was talking about earlier on the Corbett Report, I cover all sorts of information like this, false flag terrorism and other issues. But it goes much, much beyond that. I think that ultimately the entire system that we're facing here is not. It's not just a system of terrorism or things like that. I think it goes back to a system of financial control. And it's ultimately the financial control that I think is the most important part of this, because it underlies and undergirds the entire system of control that we're facing. And I understand we have James back on us with us on the landline. Or are you there,
James? I believe so. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. All right. Good to have you back.
Yeah, we just went through a phone, Skype, and a cell phone. So I'm on the cell phone now. So obviously somebody is really playing around here. Do not want this information to get out, but that's kind of par for the course. I know most of the listeners just kind of roll with the punches.
Absolutely. Well, there's no doubt that that this type of information is vehemently opposed, and we have to put up with things like this from time to time. But it's good to have you back anyway.
Yeah, there's so many events unfolding, and it just seems to be that, you know, base human rights are just pretty much in the toilet right now. And there's a painting, I can't remember the guy's name, that he just put this painting out, and I'm sure you've probably seen it, but it has all the forefathers on one side. And, you know, our latest president's on the other side, and Obama actually standing on a constitution. And all the forefathers are just going, what are you doing? You know, it just sums it up. It's such a beautiful painting. And it shows that, you know, we had some very powerful people that, you know, put this country together in the beginning, but then you know, it got hijacked by this other group, and it's a series of hijacks, and now we've lost. I mean, the Constitution is in the toilet. The Bill of Rights is pretty much, you know, in the toilet, and we need to find some way to get back to base human decency, it seems.
I agree with that very much, and I think it is a question more of restoration than revolution, because I think revolutionary tendencies can be directed and manipulated by financial interests and people with the deep pockets to direct things in the direction they want. And I think a good example of that is the Tea Party movement, which most people don't know actually started with the 9/11 Truth Movement back in 2006. There was the Boston 9/11 Truth Group did a Tea Party where they threw the 9/11 Commission report in the river. And that begat the Ron Paul revolution type meetings, and Ron Paul started to become this this Tea Party, I guess, figure of the idea of going back to constitutional government. And then once that started to really take off with the Ron Paul revolution in the lead up to the 2008 election, then suddenly we see this being co-opted and corrupted by these mainstream Republican type people who come in and say, yes, it's all about us, and these are the ideas we stand for, and it goes completely off in a different direction. I think that's a good example of a genuine grassroots movement that was trying to do something truly radical, that is to get rid of the Federal Reserve, which is the key linchpin to the financial control of America, and being co-opted and corrupted off, so that now it's just gotten to the ridiculous point where Republicans are now back on board fully with Federal Reserve insiders, and supposedly, according to Fox News, the person who won the first GOP debate the other night was a former Federal Reserve banking officer. So it's just the banking system tends to win no matter which way people vote, as we said before. So I think there is a genuine understanding among the public. People are really waking up to the key issues and what's really going on. And I think the system is going to try to co-opt and corrupt that genuine feeling that people have and try to use it to their own ends. So we have to keep educating people about what's really going on and what the real agenda is, so they don't fall into those types of traps.
Yeah, they always seem to redirect it. I received an email, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but they said they double-checked it, and there was a person that tried to get new bills from the Federal Reserve and cash in some really old bills for some new ones, and basically he called and they put him in touch with that department, and that department said that their answer machine said that as of May 1st, they're no longer in business, and also as of, they said by November, they're going to be totally gone, basically dismantled. So, that's a great thought, but you know, they double checked it, and this one person said it's true. But you know, I haven't checked into that myself, but supposedly if you call them and tell them you want to turn in old notes for some new ones, that this is supposed to be the recording that you get.
Well, I haven't heard anything about that, so I can't really speak to the truth or lack thereof of that story, but it is certainly indicative of the idea, at any rate, that we are heading towards the collapse of the dollar, and that is absolutely, I mean, that's just obvious and evident from so many different things that are going on. And even the collapse of the dollar, which I think has really been planned and that America has been positioned for this for a long time now, I think that even that they can still use to their own ends, because a lot of people get hung up on the idea that people like David Rockefeller or George Soros or others are American, or at least naturalized Americans, and thus people tend to think that maybe they want America to survive or thrive. But I don't see it in that way at all. I think these types of families with all of this money and wealth and resources behind them, they don't have any allegiance to any nation state. And in fact, if you go to David Rockefeller's memoirs, he'll write about how he's a proud internationalist and how he wants a one world government. And he admits it all out in the open. And again, a lot of us have been conditioned to believe that one world government is all of us joining hands and singing kumbaya and living under sunshine and lollipops for the rest of eternity. But I see it much, much in a different context, basically under the thumb of a small group of people who can control the entire world system by controlling the access to wealth. So that I think the fall of the American dollar and the American economy and the American empire is very much being consciously strategized at this point, and China is being consciously built up as the the answer to this. It's going to be the engine of the New World Order, according to George Soros. And people can just type that into YouTube and see all sorts of videos where he talks about that. And I think it's getting to the point where we now see that the collapse of the dollar is not something that people joke about anymore. It's very, very much a real thing. And we saw recently with the S&P trying to say that they might downgrade the American credit because America has no fiscal policy that makes sense. And we see Timothy Geithner saying, well, that means you have to raise the debt limit, otherwise we're going to default and it'll all be your fault. As if just raising the debt limit and going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into debt created out of nothing by the bankers is somehow going to save the system. I don't know. It's a ridiculous scenario, and it relies on the people not understanding even the basic precepts of how money is created in the system or what money is at its base. And again, that's another thing. If we don't have knowledge about this, we will perish for the lack of knowledge.
Yeah, it seems basically, you know, money on its own basically is what worth about 2 cents or something worth of paper. And it's just the belief, you know, in the people that are backing it. And you know, and now I noticed that all these other countries are taking, you know, the yen and rubles and everything else for oil. And oil used to be the backing. You know, we lost the gold backing and went to oil, you know, for dollars, and now that went out the door, and so it's just a matter of time before it just basically becomes an idea that a lot of people are losing faith in.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's exactly it, because money is just what people accept as money, and we've really been, I think, purposefully led away from that understanding over the past several decades. Especially in the Western countries. I'm Canadian, but I live in Japan. And of course, most of my listeners are in America. So in that Western context, in developed countries, we've just basically been trained to accept that money is this paper that we have in our wallets and or, you know, some digits on a screen or on our bank statement. And we've never really been taught to question that or why that is or how that works. And so now people, I mean, that debate is happening on a mass scale now, and something that I think is an incredibly good sign is something like the Ron Paul movement, and in 2008 when he was having these rallies, and you had tens of thousands of people chanting in unison, end the Fed, end the Fed, and they had at least some understanding of what the Fed is and how it operates. I mean, that in itself is a revolutionary, simply because we've never really seen in our generation, or even in the past few generations, that kind of mass movement behind economic, it's true, underlying economic issues. And when you start to look back at American history, you find that really since the founding of America, the history of America has really been this long struggle between the colonies, the people who were fighting for their independence from the crown, and the people working for the crown, who basically wanted to subject the American economy to a central bank that was ruled offshore by the crown and the banksters and the old world, the European wealth. And we see in 1913 with the institution of the Federal Reserve that ultimately that debate was decided in the favor of the banksters. And ever since then, people, the idea of talking about the banking system or how it works fundamentally has largely shifted away off into the realm of economic academics, and people don't really talk about it. But if you look before that point, there were all these mass popular movements that were really concerned with how money is created, who controls it, what it should be based on, so that even in the late 19th century, of course, you have William Jennings Bryan and the Cross of Gold speech, and you have all these incredible mass movements in the past that are based on this, and so it's good to see that happening now. And it doesn't mean I necessarily support the Austrian school of economics or that only gold can be used as money. In fact, I don't believe that. But I think it's still a good thing to be injecting this into the debate and getting people to really think about these issues. Because again, if we're not thinking about it, then we're just going to stumble along blindly into this economic collapse. And that's going to put millions, if not tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people around the world into even more grinding poverty and ultimately enslavement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they always say, there's a lot of different sayings, you know, you take a man's job, you know, and you'll have him angry, take away his food, and you're going to have a revolution. And, you know, it seems to be we are moving into a food shortage, you know, because of all this crazy, insane weather modification going on. Have you looked much into the chemtrail issue?
I have talked about it on my podcast before, and I've talked to people like Rosalind Peterson of California Skywatch, and and yeah, there's no doubt that there are all sorts of things going on right now that and the more you look into it, the more you find that this chemtrailing is actually they say it's to decrease the temperature of the Earth in their little white papers and things they write about what they want to do and what they're maybe kind of doing a little bit at an experimental level that they'll admit to. And they say it's to lower the temperature of the Earth and to save us from global warming. But of course, the actual evidence shows that, it's actually raising the temperature, which is interesting because it seems like, again, with the climate change hoax, that it seems that they're actually trying to make it happen in order to bring about the excuse that they need to garner more control for themselves and institute their taxes and carbon credits and all of that, which is just another form of control. And there's all sorts of other issues, obviously, with the chemtrailing and the aluminum and barium oxide and all of these chemicals that are being put into our environment. And that's why it's interesting to see, like, for instance, a couple of years ago, Monsanto patenting their aluminum-resistant crops just in time for the raising levels of aluminum in the soil, which no one can figure out except for the fact that chemtrails have aluminum as a key ingredient. But no one wants to talk about that, of course.
Yeah, they're finding a lot of these toxic heavy metals 6,000 times over the toxic limit. And the EPA, nobody will talk about this. They won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And we've talked to senators about it that looked into it and came back, and basically they were told, look, if you enjoy your family and your job, you know, and want to continue breathing, you won't go there. And they didn't. You know, they dropped it like a hot potato. So, I mean, it's that serious, you know, for, you know, a lot of people have disappeared talking about chemtrails, and their whole life has been disrupted. I know I got in big trouble for it because I brought it out in the early 90s and went on a local TV station here, and I brought toxicologists, and I brought, you know, an engineer and all these different, and William Thomas, and all of us got together on this, you know, station here. And talked about the chemtrails and what was going on, and time to look up. And 2 days later, we had a plane treetop level spray us. And I live out on a ranch out in the middle of nowhere, and the chickens all just dropped. You know, they just hit the ground, and some kind of a nerve agent or something is what they sprayed. And that was their answer to, you know, going live on the air on TV and talking about the chemtrails. The one of the other things I wanted to mention too is that, you know, they're also spraying strontium in these chemtrails. And, you know, I always wonder between Fukushima and the chemtrails, you know, this radiation may not just be coming from Fukushima, it may be coming from the chemtrails themselves.
Right. Well, those are good points, and we need a serious investigation into them. But I also want to put out a caution about that, because I know that this is extremely serious stuff, and I know that the people who are out there in a big way making a lot of waves about these issues do get into trouble with the various authorities or powers that be. But I certainly don't want to create some kind of fear in the listeners about talking about these sorts of subjects or getting the word out about them, because it one of the recurring parts of my podcast is something called Requiem for the Suicided, where I take a look at some of the people who have been basically murdered right out in plain sight, and then their grisly, horrible deaths have been labeled suicides, like Gary Webb, who supposedly shot himself twice in the head for revealing about CIA drug running in the 80s and 90s, or Jesse Trenadue's brother, Kenneth Trenadue, who was killed in Oklahoma Federal Transfer Center because he basically looked like someone who may have been John Doe number two in the Oklahoma City bombing. All these types of things where people have been murdered in grisly fashion, and then their deaths labeled a suicide. So I know this type of thing goes on, but I want to stress to the listeners out there that I really don't think that people have to worry or watch over their backs at every possible moment for this type of thing, because the vast majority of people out there, there's just too many of us to be contained or to be watched at all times. And I think part of what the psychological operations that the CIA and others run is to try to convince people that they can control everything and they can watch everything. And if you speak up, then you're going to be hounded or that sort of thing. And I want to fight against that idea, because there are way too many of us for them to control us like that. And when we start to internalize that and accept that, and we start to not talk about certain subjects or not to go out there and confront these abuses of power when we see them, then they've won. And I don't think that's what we want. Ultimately, we want as many people as possible speaking up on these so that there's no way they could possibly go after all of us.
Oh, I agree. That's the thing. The more they did, the more I came forward, you know, and you know, it just really irritated me because I'm saying, well, wait a second, you know, these things are going down. It's obvious. You know, I've got chemical engineers, people measuring, you know, the snow packs, all of these things going on. The evidence is all there. They're trying to say that the aluminum was coming from farmers, you know, using chemical pesticides and overusing them and things like that. And I said, well, nobody's farming on top of Mount Adams or Mount Shasta. You know, they.
Right.
I don't think a bunch of farmers ran up there with aluminum on their back and spread it around the. You know, it just made no sense. Everything they kept coming up with, and you know, I never quit. I mean, I'm always putting out posts on the chemtrails and things like that, and you know, I feel it. I mean, when they are spraying heavy, and I walk outside, I know within about 2 or 3 days my body is just trash from whatever they're dumping, and it can't be good for the planet. And you know, aluminum actually blocks trees and plants from actually bringing water up the roots and things like that. So it's having some pretty serious effects on the environment.
Well, I'm afraid you're right, and that's one of those issues where there's not much that you or I individually can do about that. I think that's why it's so important for us to really effect that restoration and take back control of our own governments so that these types of secretive programs can't go on. And that's, you know, that's such a huge, overwhelming task that most people kind of shut down at the thought of it. But it's an all or nothing proposition. I really think we're moving into an age where the types of technologies that they have at their disposal now, to imagine that in the hands of a Hitler or someone like that is just unthinkable, because it really represents the enslavement of humanity. And whether that's biological, chemical attack, like through chemtrails, or whether that's just complete martial law, crackdown of control, whatever form it takes, it cannot be a good thing. And that's why it's really time for us to grow up as a civilization, or to perish, because I really think that we're heading into that all or nothing type of end game where they definitely have an idea where they want to take us. And unless we do resist and we do try to cut out the legs underneath them by taking back control of the government and taking back control of our money supply and things like that, unless we can do that, it's what hope do we have?
Yeah, I agree. It's got to be a unified effort, and can only be done by educating the masses and, you know, getting them to wake up and smell the coffee and just stop participating, you know, in these programs. The you know, these endless wars and everything. To me, it's a no-brainer. It's pretty simple. Thou shalt not kill, and don't do anything to others you don't want to have done unto you. It's not that complicated. And, you know, I saw this, I keep forgetting, Anne something. What, Coulter? Is that her name?
Yeah.
She goes on the air and she says, you know, I'm tired of hearing all this war for oil. You know, we're at war for oil. She goes, so what? She goes, if we're at war for oil, it's a good thing. We need the oil. You know, there's nothing wrong with going to war for oil. And she made a couple other statements out there that were, I can't remember the other ones, but it was just one after, oh, radiation is good for you, that the Japanese people should be grateful that that went off, because they're all getting the good stuff, you know. And you know, which leads us into Fukushima. I'm wondering, how are things over there concerning the reactor, and from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, it's kind of bizarre to be living here right now. I'm about 400 miles southwest of Fukushima, so I'm about as far away as you can get on the main island from where the disaster is taking place. And over here, people are just, I mean, really going about their daily lives, and no one's even really discussing this issue sort of in day-to-day conversation. So it's really bizarre to be living this and then going home and reading about it at night and reading about the incredible things that are going on. But it's perhaps not surprising to people who know about the Japanese culture, and it's kind of a culture that's based on, you know, you just have to gut up and take it and carry on and do what, you know, do what you're told. And that's kind of the underlying cultural norm here. And it's in some ways, I guess it's good. Certainly in the wake of the earthquake and the tsunami, we didn't see really much, if any, looting or rioting or the types of things that you might expect if this happened in some of the other Western countries where people probably would have broken down in societally. But in other ways, it's horrible because it really represents the type of feudal conditioning that people live under here, under the empire and the empirical system. So from that perspective, it's kind of bizarre to be the discrepancy between just my daily life versus what's going on here. And one crystal clear example of that happened a few weeks ago when there was a shift in the winds. A lot of the winds have been blowing out east over towards the west coast of the United States. So the fallout was not necessarily affecting Japan as much in areas far away like where I am. But the winds shifted a few weeks ago and part of the cloud came over right over the part where I'm at, actually. And there was some rainfall. And of course, during rainfall, that's when the radioactive particles will precipitate out. So that's where the mm-hmm. fallout really occurs. And in South Korea, there were parents that were freaking out and basically demanding that schools closed for those days when the rain was falling because the radioactive fallout, and they didn't want their children in it. And there was absolutely none of that here. There was no schools closed. It was just business as usual. And it's just such a bizarre discrepancy. But we see signs that it's changing. And there's some reports coming out that parents in Fukushima, the prefecture, the state, the area where that the disaster happened, are starting to get furious with the government, who has now basically raised the allowable limits of radiation in playgrounds so that they basically don't have to send the students home. They can just continue to play in these radioactive playgrounds that are now showing, you know, hundreds of times regular radiation levels. So parents are really starting to get fed up over there, but it's something that's not being really touted in the media here. So again, there's just this big discrepancy between what's going on and what's happening in everyone's daily life here.
Yes, unbelievable. I saw that. I saw all the... You know, you've seen the picture of all the foil hats they have?
No.
They have these, like, foil hats. They're made out of some kind of material. And they're kind of cool looking, basically, but they look like a hood. And I guess they have them under their desk for disasters or something. I have a friend over there. I was talking to him about it. And I said, why is everybody wearing these hats? You know, and I thought it was some kind of a sect or a group or something and religious group or whatever, and they said, he told me no. He said they have those under their desks or in their desks or whatever, and I guess when they have an earthquake or something, they pull out all these hats, you know, and put them on. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Well, I don't really know about that, because in the area of Japan where I'm at, it's actually there don't tend to be very large earthquakes right in this area. So I think it's actually quite a nice part of Japan to live in. There's no volcanoes, no earthquakes, typhoons aren't that bad here. So it's quite a nice little area of the country. But yeah, it's definitely a country that's used to these types of cataclysmic, huge scale natural disasters. So there's a lot of awareness of it and preparation for it. And I think the Japanese government did a fairly good job with the response to the tsunami. But now we see in the wake of that immediate response, we see the long-term sort of response being neglected, and we see people are still living in shelters and now being kicked out of the gymnasiums and things where they were staying because schools basically want to get back to business as usual, and these people still have nowhere to go. So it's still quite a huge humanitarian concern, but of course it's kind of just falling out of the falling off the media radar where it was such a big deal for the first few weeks.
I know they're telling a lot of them to go back home into areas that aren't suitable, you know, for living, basically, because of the water and the radiation and everything else. I thought that was kind of amazing how they are really trying to downplay it and get people to move back, you know, into some of their homes, which really doesn't sound like a very good idea at all.
Exactly. And they did have, I think it was a 20-kilometer exclusion zone around the Fukushima nuclear plant for a while, and even after even after it was demonstrated and proven that the radiation levels were higher in areas outside that exclusion zone than they were legally allowed to be for people to be there, they still didn't want to make it a bigger exclusion zone. So finally, a couple of weeks ago, they actually extended it. So now I can't remember the exact number, but it's something more like 50 kilometers. But still, I mean, there's definitely huge radiation concerns in that area of the country. And I don't think they're being... Well, they are being taken seriously, but they're not acting on that information. So we had the radiation advisor to the prime minister resign last week, saying that basically the government's just playing politics with their recommendations and things like that, and they're not taking public safety into account. So we actually had an advisor to the prime minister resign last week, which is a pretty huge thing in Japan. I mean, people don't tend to resign from those positions out of principle very often. So when it happens, it's definitely something to take note of.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's like taking a good hard look at that and why. You know, hopefully he, you know, put out a report on why he resigned and kind of warned the people about what's up with that.
He had a press conference.
Yeah, unfortunately we're out of time here. We've got, I can't thank you enough for hanging in there with all these cutoffs. It's amazing. We have three different systems here to stay on the air and we're down to one now. So,
well, I'm glad I could be here. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Yeah, obviously we hit a nerve, you know, because they were pushing buttons. But anyway, so let's give your website one more time where people want to go to hear more of your continued updates.
They can find me at CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com.
Great. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show and keep up the great work and keeping us all informed on what's really going down.
Well, thank you, and you keep up the work, too.
All right, take care. Well, we're out of time, folks. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and remember, if you do shows like this, have about three different airwaves to get on because a couple of them just might get shut off. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.